May 8th, 2019. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson, here with my better half, Eric Rosenthal. Sir, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, brother?
I'm well. Eric, living the better life means betting on the Kentucky Derby for many of us. Not all of us, of course, but for many of us, it means betting on the Derby, the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. We're gonna talk a little bit of Derby. You and I both have each sort of had some action. Yours maybe a little more interesting than mine. But this episode, to quote the great Shane Meals, one of the legends in Vegas podcasting, this is gonna be a hodgepodge of an episode. We are going to go. I have a number of things bulleted that I never either got to in the past or I've been meaning to. Or following up on things. So that's going to be today's episode. Let's start with the Kentucky Derby. It was the 145th Kentucky Derby, the longest running event in American sports. Not a lot of people know that it predates World Series. And it's the first year in a while that I did not watch it.
Wow.
I had every intention to, Eric. It was one of those days I started doing stuff around 4. And then, you know, days going by, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, I wonder what time it is. And it was like 6:58 and the Derby had just ended a few minutes earlier. So I just sort of lost track of time and ended up not watching the Derby. MGM National Harbor has a race book. So off track betting is allowed in Maryland. I know Maryland Live has it. I don't think Horseshoe Baltimore might. Do you remember seeing a counter at Horseshoe Baltimore? I don't remember seeing it, but for some reason I feel like there's one there.
I really wasn't looking when we were there. So
Eric, pay more attention when we're hanging out.
Yeah, all right. Okay. All right. Race books. Where we are. I'll keep my eyes peeled. I'll bust out the Junior Woodchuck guidebook and double check. You got it, Tim.
Oh, you know what's funny is race books, though, because they don't, especially, you know, MGM's is actually kind of outfitted with like a bunch of screens and stuff, and it has like sort of the, you know, the few rows of televisions, right, where people can watch their own tracks and everything. And I'm pretty sure that was built, and I've mentioned this before, I'm pretty sure they built that so that way when Maryland does pass sports betting, they can quickly make that into, you know, they could expand on that. Whereas I think, especially, I know at Maryland Live, maybe Horseshoe is where it is, and I'm making up the one at Maryland Live. I don't know. Anyways, off-track betting allowed in Maryland. I went to MGM National Harbor on Saturday to play a little free play, and while I was there I was like, hey, I'm here, I might as well make a bet on the Derby. And so I made I did an exacta box with a 5-horse and a 16-horse. I can't remember, Improbable and Game Winner, I think were the names of those horses. It was the only bet that I made because I had listened to like half of, this is like the worst year for the Derby for me. I didn't listen to a lot of content going into it. I didn't really have much thought about it going into it. I made one wager and I didn't even watch the race. So that's my Derby story. As far as for bets that I made, as soon as I went to ESPN and it said maximum security wins, I was like, oh, okay, well clearly my bet lost. And then hours afterwards, I guess not hours afterwards, but like what, maybe 45 minutes. It took a while, it felt like, for that decision to be made. Maybe I'm exaggerating how long that was because I didn't watch it, wasn't really paying attention. How long was it for them to make the decision on that foul?
About a half hour.
About a half hour.
Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah, okay. So it did feel like it took a while. They make the official decision that Maximum Security's jockey fouled coming off of the rail in front of a group of 3 horses, and the horse that benefited from that, who ended up with being declared the winner, was Something House. What was it? Or Hort? See, this is
Country House.
Country House. The horse that ended up benefiting from it, who was declared the winner, Country House. who I think went off as a 65-1.
It was an absurd long shot.
Yeah. Unreal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and then after all of that, I go on Twitter. I haven't been on Twitter since all of this was developing. A listener of ours, Eric, and I'm not sure, I don't know, I should have asked him if it was okay to mention who it was, but a listener of ours, wonderful guy, promotes the show every week. He sent apparently going into the Derby, he had sent all me and a few other podcasters a message saying that we all had action on Maximum Security. And so I'm going into this with the decision already had been reversed, or not reversed, but altered, with Country House being the winner and Maximum Security getting the foul. And so it's funny. It was funny reading. it was funny reading this sequence of messages that I'm like brand new to, of him posting the tickets, a couple of podcasters being like, oh, that's cool, whatever. And then some of them being like, oh, wait, I have action in this. What's going on? And then watching them like celebrate and then get pissed off. And like, it's funny just reading all that in a matter of seconds, right? Even though it spanned a good like hour from original post when I caught up. So I had action on Maximum Security, and I didn't even know about it until the ticket wasn't going to cash anyways. Eric, you were more involved than that. Tell the listeners the action you had.
Well, so I am not a horse racing handicapper, but I participate in wagering on all the Triple Crown races. And this year, the horse that I had action on was Maximum Security. I had Maximum Security across the board. I had it keyed in a couple of exactas and trifectas. None of the exotics would have paid either way, but I thought I had a very profitable day. That was a real sweat, by the way. That was, you think you won, and you're waiting for it to be confirmed that you won. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, it kind of felt like you're all in at the turn and you're waiting for the river and, you know, you're ahead and then yeah. You watch the other guy suck out on a, you know, one or two outer. But nobody thought there would actually be a disqualification. Like the conversation was, you know, yeah, there's, you know, a foul, but they're not going to take him down, at least where I was. And they took him down. And I watched all of my winning wagers turn into losing wagers. Them's the breaks. Yeah. 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 That was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. For listeners not familiar with sports betting, with horse betting, I should say, across the board, as Eric says, it means he had Maximum Security to win, place, and show, right? So had him across the board. So if he'd been anywhere in the top three, they would have cashed appropriately. And then exacta right. and trifecta. Exacta is what is first and second horse, right? And then trifecta, of course, getting the first, second, and third.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's a superfecta, which goes as far as fourth place. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, in any event, that was a lot of excitement. You know, I mean, imagine if the river took a half hour to wait if the guy sucked up, you know, that was.
Did you have any similar action on any other horses?
No. No. The only other wagers placed were for other people. I make a bet for the guys at You Can Bet on That every year on the Kentucky Derby. I had a couple who are not, you know, they're not by an out. They can't, you know, they don't have OTB or, you know, a track by them, and they asked me to place wagers for them. The only action that I had for myself was on Maximum Security.
And was it just listening to other handicappers? What brought you to Maximum Security? What you mentioned you're not a horse handicapper, so what led you to
Somebody else made the pick and I ran with it.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fair.
Yep.
You said you bet the Triple Crown, so you'll bet Belmont and Preakness then.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good.
Have you ever been in the Derby?
No, I have not been. Which one is Preakness? Is right up here in Baltimore.
Yep.
And I've considered going up there for the Preakness.
You gotta go to the Derby. You gotta
because
go.
It's local. Yeah, I should go to the Derby.
It's not that far from you.
You've been?
I've been. Yeah.
Okay. And
that was well worth the trip. It's one of those things. It's kind of like New Year's in Vegas or New Year's in Times Square. You definitely have to do it once, and then let your experience dictate if you want to do it again. Right. So right. Some people will swear by it and do it all the time. Some people one and done. I would go again, but I don't feel like I have to go again. But I definitely had to go at least the one time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm confident I've been to horse tracks, right, and I've enjoyed it. So I'm confident that I would enjoy the experience.
This is different.
Yeah. All right.
This is different. This isn't like any
other. Right. Sure. I guess what I mean, the foundation of it, I already enjoy. Right. Of like observing a horse race. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll put that on my bucket list and see what I can make happen. Eric, we've been the past few weeks, we've been talking about listener contributions, right? As far as audio is concerned, we tried the SpeakPipe tab on the website. We floated the idea, maybe we get a hotline if people are actually interested in it. And I think the result is not as valuable as we thought it might have been going into it. So moving forward, we're not going to have any themed requests or official requests saying, hey, we're going to be talking about this soon. If you want to contribute, go ahead and send it. But the tab on the right hand, the tab on the right of the page, thebetterlife.us, will remain there. If you'd like to send us anything at any given time, on any subject, feel free to. And if it's a good fit for an episode, we will include it. But, I think the understanding is we got other shows for that. Don't need it for this. I'm on board. That was my original thought as well anyway. So I'm glad that we're back where we started. And it's always nice to feel things out. You don't know what's going to work and what's not until you try some things, right? So that's where we are moving forward on listener contributions via audio. Another question we got from listeners was, is there a way to listen to the audio being shared on Patreon without having to go to the Patreon site? If there's a way to get that feed? Well, apparently now there is. Patreon has created an RSS feed for the creators, and they should Patreon should supply a RSS feed to the patrons that then they can put into their pod catcher of choice. So there's no way to just like go into, like, there's no feed automatically going into any of these typical spots, right? Like iTunes, such or whatever. But there should be an RSS feed that the supporters, the patrons on Patreon, should be able to use to put into their podcatcher. I'm still learning a little bit more about it, but the answer to a lot of your questions is yes, that is technically available. I will post more information about it as I learn more about it on Patreon. And that should be an opportunity for us to get audio to you without you having to come. Cause I understand. I mean, I support a podcast on Patreon as well, and I don't listen to half the audio they post because going to the site, even from your phone, is a bit inconvenient. So trust me, I empathize with that disappointment. So I was just as eager as everybody else to find out how to make that happen. Looks like there is a way to make that happen. I'll keep everybody up to date. Also on Patreon, a new $6 level for the Better Life Book Club. Eric wants a quarter. I'm going to send everybody who's at the $6 or larger. If they're pledging $6 or more, they'll be automatically part of the book club. They can technically opt out if they'd like, I suppose. But once a quarter, I will send everybody that's at this level or above a book from the gambling world.
Hmm.
And the first one will be Chris Andrews, Then One Day.
Oh, nice.
Which is dropping in June. Yes. Yeah, so pre-order is available for that now. And so I have had this idea of doing the Better Life Book Club. And because, you know, I know gamblers like to read about gambling. There's a lot of them out there. How do you know what to read? Well, I'll read them for you. And the ones that I particularly like, I will include in this book club. It'll cover a sort of an array of topics, but I won't have anything be too niche. Once a quarter, pretty simple. $6 Patreon level, patreon.com/thebetterlife is where you can support the show that way. For anybody who's not familiar, Chris Andrews is a longtime sports book operator out of Vegas. He's at the South Point now. He has a long history in sports bet or in bookmaking, and he has this wonderful. He tells these great stories from the old days of bookmaking and being in Vegas, and it's finally coming out in a book called Then One Day. It's dropping in June. That'll be the first one on the Better Life Book Club. Tip your waitress, tip your dealers, tip your favorite podcast host, patreon.com/thebetterlife.
Chrissy Andrews, by extension, actually qualifies as my mishpoche. How about that?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we get some Cal Neva stories in that book.
I've heard, like, you know, I've heard the same amount of stories anybody else has if they've listened to VSiN programming or Beating the Book, whatever. But he has a couple specifically from Cal Neva, so I think they have to be in the book.
Good.
Yeah. After a nice week in sports, it's followed by a poorer week in sports. Whatever. I guess life has to balance and right itself. But I have the Nuggets and the Bucks in series, which is fine because I have the Celtics in our bets. But before we made the wager, when I asked you which side do you want, when I asked that question, I already had action on the Bucks, so I was actually kind of fine with whichever one you chose. And so it looks like I'll be paying up on the charity bet. In fact, I've already actually made a donation in anticipation. I'm that confident the Bucks are going to take down this series. They're just a stronger team. And the Nuggets, after going into quadruple overtime and losing game three, bounce back in game four. They're the favorites again in their series. I like where I'm at on that. And then I also have Toronto, which I got at +105 going into game four.
Nice.
Yeah. So I got plus money on Toronto. They're now -200 going into game five, which plays as we're recording. So nice position there on Toronto. But baseball sort of day to day still. Look, I'm looking forward to the summer, to be honest. Sports betting's been a little more involved. It takes time, right? When you're a sports bettor and you like looking at the games every day and stuff like that, it takes time out of your day. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to the summer when it's just a little bit of soccer and baseball. And I will be making my NFL season win total bets soon too. I've been sort of finalizing sort of my thoughts on that through the consuming the my preferred content. And I think now that the draft's over and stuff like that, and there's sort of all those implications, I'm probably make two or three strong season win total bets.
I don't ever, well, I should say I rarely have any futures action. So it's still the day to day. And again, we're opposites. So you were down, I was up this week. Yeah, you know, listen, I guess that's you're the yin to my yang, right?
I suppose so. Yeah. I think what has to happen now though is on Thursdays I'm gonna ask you, hey, how's your week going? And if you're not doing well, I'm gonna double down on the stuff I like that day. Like, oh, this is my week. I need to start getting some action.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's right.
Absolutely. Make a value bet.
I went in on Sunday to MGM National Harbor to play some video poker. There were two promotions going on at the time. There was one that's been going on since the end of March, and it goes through, I think, late May. Scratch It Rich, I think is the name of the promotion. 25 slot points up to 125, so five iterations of this. For each 25 points you get, you play a little kiosk game, and you either get a prize or some free play or drawing entries to their weekly drawing, whatever it may be. Food credit. I've gotten a food credit a couple times. So that was going on. And they also had a Cinco de Mayo offer or promotion where it was the same thing. Every 25 points up to five times, but the kiosk game only gave out free play. So there was no other like food credit or anything. Like, you play the little kiosk game to get some free play. I went in there. I was pretty excited. Like, I like playing these little promotions. One, it gives me a nice little day of play, right, with MGM. And then also, the promotions hopefully pad some of, pad that gap of expected losses. Boy, did I need that free play, Eric. Oh, free fall. I mean, I think any video poker player, no matter how frequent or infrequent you may play video poker, I think we've all had this, just that free fall, right? Where it's like your low pairs aren't catching anything. You're not getting any of your straight or flush draws. It seems like the best you can do is, you get really excited if you get three of a kind, right? It's been, it's that kind of free fall. And then, 10, 15, almost 20 hands in a row, which is like, of just nothing. It was horrible. I hate it. I don't mind, we're gamblers, right? We know we're playing negative EV games. Losing's losing. It happens. But there's something about sitting at a video poker machine going, hitting, just all you're doing is hitting buttons and watching your credits reduce. Like, that's all you're doing. It's like, why am I here? And then it teases you with like four to a royal and stuff like that. I haven't gotten quads in a while, which is
really
frustrating. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's been two or three sessions since I gotten quads, I think. No, two. Just two. Over the weekend, I had two sessions. I didn't get quads. I need a session. And still, again, no real flush. I did some rough math, and I have to double check to see if I did this right. But looking at, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, which I should have coming into this, but I didn't think about mentioning this on the show. I did some rough math while I was waiting for my food on Sunday. So I got done playing. One of the things that I got from the Scratch It Rich promotion was a food credit. So I went to go use my food credit. And while I was waiting for my food, I was like, I wonder like how many of these sessions I need to put in before I've hit the threshold of I should have hit the average royal flush. And what is 40,000 hands. Is that right?
I don't know if it's 40,000 to get a royal or 40,000 to be dealt a royal.
On average, you will hit a royal flush every 40,000 hands.
Okay.
So every 40,000 hands, on average, you would hit a royal. And if I did, I was doing really quick math. Like, I was doing some Google searches on my phone, and then I did some quick math. And based off of coin in to slot point or coin in to base points for video poker, and putting in one of those 125 point sessions that I typically do, because those are the kind of promotions that I'll play over there. Is the every 25, I play those kind of promotions. So if 125 slot points is an average or is a typical session for me when I go and actually sit down and play, based off of how many hands that sort of resulted in the coin in that takes or that gets me. I think the math came to 160 sessions. I should see the average royal, or I like it would be assumed that I would get a royal in that set of hand. 160 is a lot, right? Like, I don't, you know, that's, you know, it's having one of those sessions every 3 days ish, right? So, I don't know if I've put in that much play, but it's got to be close.
Then you're due.
Especially, yeah. So, exactly. So we don't, I don't want to say I'm due, Eric, but what I'm trying to say is I'm due. but I'm excited. And here's what I wonder each time. I'm like, if I get a royal, will I be able to resist the urge of posting it on social media right away? That's the big question. Will I post it and then talk about it, or will I come on the show with a big surprise?
Yeah, you're gonna post it right away.
I'm posting it. I cannot wait to rub it. I cannot wait to rub it in my past failure's face. I finally got a royal flush.
What's it gonna say? Suck it, Dr. Mike, with a picture of your royal?
No. Actually, that is actually the first thing that I'm doing. I said it a while ago that if I ever get a royal, the first thing I'm doing is calling the You Can Bet on That hotline. And telling them about it. I may talk about it on the show before they talk about it, but the first thing I'm doing is calling their hotline, letting them know.
I'm a little offended you'd call them before May. That's a tough one. I don't know. I'm gonna have to.
To be fair, that was decided before you and I like really became friends. This was like in my first like month or two doing the show.
Hmm. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm sorry if that made you feel a certain way. should we stop the recording and talk about this real quick?
Let that be our biggest problem.
Yeah. Why did the show break up? Well, Tim didn't call Eric first to tell him about his royal, and things just spiraled out of control from there. So after I got after I was done eating, I mean, it was before. I don't know. Somewhere in the sequence of events, Eric. Like I said. Video poker was a free fall, free play. The free play that I got from both kiosk games brought me back a little bit. So then I went and sat down and played some blackjack because it had been a while and I was ready to play some blackjack. And blackjack got me back the rest of the way. So still got to leave with my head high. I had a fun hand of splitting twos four times, or I guess three times, right? So it gave me four hands. Dealer had an up card of five. I get twos. I split them. One's an 18. Very good. Next one, two again. Split it. Second hand ends up becoming a 20. Goes to the third hand. Gets another two. Splits it. So I got four hands here, and then hands three and four get tens. So I have 12. So I have an 18, a 20, a 12, and a 12. And I'm like, oh, I get a little, or I didn't say anything yet. I was watching it, and Steel had up card five. He busted, and I was like, whew, got a little nervous there for a second. And the pit boss was like, oh, I knew how to be nervous. That's the kind of hand you want to be in. And I was like, yo, I've played enough blackjack to know this is the hand I'm allowed to be nervous on. We've all been there with the multiple splits. Oh, and the 20 was a double, right? So I got an 8 for a 10, and I doubled down, right? So. So I had four hands, I had split up to
five units.
Yeah. So I had five units up out there. Right. So, yeah. I'm allowed to be, I'm allowed to be nervous. I've played this game a little too long to.
When the dealer's turning his cards, is it happening in slow motion for you?
Oh, of course. I'm just waiting for the six, right? Yeah. The up card of five. Yeah. I'm just waiting for the six to flip over. Right. Yeah. You become a pessimist when you play blackjack for too long. It's funny, like, it's, you know, when it's funny you say that, because, or funny that you point out like how you view the cards, because when things are going right and you see that six, you're like, oh, it's easy, right? That's an easy. But then you see that six, like when things haven't been going well, and you're like, he's got a five under there, I know it. He's got a five.
I've been a Mets fan my whole life. I perpetually look at the world like the dealer has a six underneath. So, you know, it's been beaten into me since my youth. What can I tell you?
Yeah, very well. Well, On last week's episode of You Can Bet on That, a player was talking about leaving his bet at a roulette table. Eric, I assume you listened to that episode.
Yep.
Do you recall that call?
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I spoke about this on Twitter already, but just to make sure that I have, before I talk to our audience about it, from my understanding, Eric, it sounded like he won and then left the table and then came back to find out that his original bet had already, that he had left it there, and that they didn't offer him winnings from it hitting again, nor the original bet that he left.
Yeah, I think they treated it as abandoned chips and took it off the table.
Okay. So, what are your feelings? Before I go into my experiences with this and my thoughts, I'm curious what your feelings are, or even better, what's your understanding on, as a gambler, what can you expect the casino to do in that situation? Like, if you leave, what reasonable expectation would you have coming back to the table to either rescue the bet that you had left or even possibly collecting any winnings it may have earned while you were gone?
Yeah, it should have been one of two things. Either they took the bet down and then they should have the chips for him from the original winning wager. You know, because you don't take down the winning bet. They pay you the winnings and leave the bets up. If he walked away, they should have either taken the chips down and held them for him, or, you know, put a note on his card that there's, I think it was $2 $5 chips, if I recall correctly. So there should have been $10 for him, or if the action, you know, counted and they knew that it was his, then the winning wager should have been held for him.
Yep. I'm with you.
At a minimum, he should have gotten the $10.
Yep. Yep. I agree. At the very minimum, should have gotten a $10. I've left bets at tables plenty of times, right? The craps table a few times. I think I left, I think it's only the time that I've actually left a wager, like a sitting wager, right? I think I may have left it chips otherwise, but I think the only time I've ever left a wager out there, unknowingly, was at a craps table. And the couple times where that's happened, I've come back to that bet and the winnings that bet got while I was gone. There was one time when I was playing roulette in Peru that I left the table deliberately. This is actually why 21, I think I've told the story before, but 21 is one of my numbers because it was one of the numbers I was betting frequently, but not like my number, right? It was just part of this like group of numbers I was betting frequently. And I made my bets and then I ran off to use the restroom real quick. And on my way, I get back and the bet had just won. Red 21 had just hit. So one, like, they let me leave. Now, granted, I had a friend there, right? So my friend is technically watching my bets, but I technically, the bettor, the owner of that bet, left and the wager was still alive. I came back and I collected the winnings. And then in roulette, they don't get, like, they leave the original wager out there, right? And so, especially, and this is hard for people to notice, especially if you were the only person on that number and you only have like one chip out there. And it's difficult to notice because what do you call that thing? The
dolly?
Dolly. The dolly is sitting on the chip, right? And sometimes it's hard to remember about or to remember it, but they pay you and they leave the original bet out there. It's on you as the bettor to collect it or to move it. Right. And so when I won the bet that had won while I was in the restroom, I come back, she pays me, and me and my friends are joking, like, ha ha, it's so funny. Like, I go off to the bathroom, like, maybe I should do this more often. And then before I know it, she's putting the dolly on red 21 and again and putting chips for me. And I was like, holy smokes, what happened? And she was like, it won again. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't think to pick up the wager.
Right.
And so So if you play roulette, or if you have not played roulette and you're new to it, if you decide to play it, that's something to remember, that if you play the inside and a bet wins, they're not gonna, like, that's not gonna be part of what they pay you out. It's gonna stay there. It's up to you to move it. But to that caller's credit, at the very least, I think he had an argument for why the casino owed him the original bet that got left out there. And I think it's, I don't know if you could have, like, I don't know if there's any, like, if any persuasion to be done, or if you have any, like, real stance on it, but
we don't know the time frame. We don't.
Yeah. So that was going to be my other question, is do you remember if they said anything about a time frame on when he left and when he came back? That was the one part I had a hard time picking up on.
Yeah. I don't know. And here's the other thing that you don't know. You know, if you're betting nickels on the inside, they can make, you know, the roulette chips, the colored chips, be worth $5 a piece. We don't know if he had colored chips or if these were just, you know, regular $5 casino chips. You don't know if there were other people betting fives and somebody else claimed it. Like, there's a lot to it that I think just, you know, it's only a 3-minute recording, or, you know, whatever was offered. I have questions. I'll say it that way. Like, I think if the story is legit, and I have no reason not to believe the caller, there's probably claim to a winning bet. There's at least claim to the $10, but they, meaning the dealers, have to have reason to believe that that bet was his. And if he took off and he came back hours later and they don't remember, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot there, and I don't know that they're, you know, going to surveillance for $2 $5 chips that were left behind hours.
So for the listeners, the two takeaways you should have on this, if you're playing roulette for the first time, or you're just unfamiliar with roulette, if you hit an inside number, just be aware that your original bet is gonna remain there unless you collect it. And then if you leave chips at a table, and then remember that and go back, look, there was one time where that happened to me, and like they found me, like another player at the table came and like found, like, hey, you, like, they have a bet waiting for, or like you left a winning bet there. And so what you're entitled to in that, what rights you have, I guess it really depends on what exactly the wager was and the time frame, like you pointed out. But I think it's safe to say that if it's a reasonable amount of time, and I'm not going to put a number on it because I don't want to give anybody any false hopes or beliefs, but if you believe it's a reasonable amount of time in a reasonable situation, a good casino would have held that money for you. That's all I'm going to say. A good crew would have held that money for you.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I don't even know what jurisdiction it was. Like, there are specific rules and laws around what abandoned bets and abandoned money, and it depends is the answer.
Yeah, I guess if that happened to you, Eric, and you decided that that made you feel a certain way about the casino and you didn't want to bet there, like you wanted to go somewhere else, I'd understand, right? Like, but I don't know. Maybe not. If it was a good crew, and then that happened, I don't know. It's a don't leave your chips. There we go. There's the big takeaway. Don't leave your chips at the table. It's a risk in a number of ways.
15 minutes to come back to. You know what? Don't leave your chips behind.
Hope everybody enjoyed that segment.
Quality content.
Well, I think that's part of what's interesting about these conversations is going through the, well, what if that, or how do we feel about this? And maybe the end result is like, okay, it's what we sort of believed in the beginning, but you know, that's one to me, that's part of the fun in talking about these situations at casinos, is talking about what do we think should have happened? How would have we felt about that? Like, does the player have rights? What is the obligations to the casino based on law? Stuff like that, right? And, you know, we can hypothesize all we want if we don't know all the facts and the rules, but I think they're interesting conversations to have.
Okay, sure.
Eric's like, whatever. I don't know. It's here for the ride. Eric, I am... Oh, go ahead.
I had something interesting to add, not related Please. To that story, but you know, since it's a hot Okay. episode. So I'm at Harrah's Philadelphia. They have recently opened up their sports book, which we've talked about.
That's right.
Their drink ticket policy is, I think, fairly aggressive. For every $50 wagered, they give you two drink. For every $50 wagered, they give you one drink ticket. So a $100 bet gets you two drink tickets.
Okay, that's good.
That's good. Except a $1,000 bet also gets you two drink tickets.
Oh.
Couple of $1,000 also gets you two drink tickets.
No way.
Yeah. So not that I need, you know, 20 drink tickets for every $1,000 wagered. You know, you just can't go through them. But, you know, what was described
maybe get you to four. Maybe somewhere in the gap between the additional $1,900, they can spare two more drink tickets.
Something like that. I figured like I'm good for four Miller Lights, but no, it was two Miller Lights. So if you're going to
you should be able to get a bucket. You know what I'm saying? Like
if you're going if you're going to Harrah's Philadelphia, break up your bets so you get more drink tickets. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're betting a couple stacks, you should be able to like ask for a bucket of Miller Lite, right? Like,
well, here's.
If that's their approach at the lower end, I guess is what I'm saying, mm-hmm. right? Like if their approach at the lower end is to drink tickets, and for people who are unaware, like if you go on the strip, I mean, you got to cross that $100 threshold to even maybe get a ticket. Right, to get one drink ticket.
Yeah, some places are more.
Right. So yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you have to bet quite a bit to get a drink ticket. And the lowest amount I've ever spent to just be handed a drink ticket without request or any sort of rapport with the person is $100. And I think that was at South Point.
Yeah. Listen, when they told me $50 in action gets you a drink ticket, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like that's fantastic. That's way, you know, way less than if, you know, you had to go to a slot machine. And I mean, I guess, you know, Caesar's Entertainment, you could just, you know, put your card in and order a drink if you're a diamond or higher. But yeah, I was like, all right, well, $100 bet got me two drink tickets. Like 2000 got me two drink tickets. That math didn't add up quite the same. That was not as good, but yeah, you know, so lesson learned.
Yeah. I imagine that those drink tickets are like for like, was it printed on them? Are they limited to domestic beer and well drinks or something like that?
Something like that. I mean, I drink Miller Lite. So to me, it wasn't, you know, okay. I didn't look past it. And I get
you weren't hoping to get the newest New England style IPA from the local brewery down the street.
No, I was just looking for a Miller Lite, and the drink tickets got me bottles of Miller Lite, so I was fine. That's good. You know, I enjoy.
That is really interesting, though, that you could only put in that. Had you even chopped it up into like $400 or $500 bets, that would have gotten you, you know, four times as many drink tickets.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure if I, you know, work the people at the counter, I would have gotten more, but you know, so the interesting thing about this, and I guess people who gamble in the casino as well as the sports book, like this is always like a known thing for them. Like I could just go over to a slot machine, put my card in and get a drink. So I don't even need the drink tickets.
I'm with you on that. I've never complained too much about the stinginess of. I think if I make a wager, I should get to be able to drink a drink ticket, right? And I understand there being a threshold, right? Like you just can't come up and make like a $10 wager and get your drink ticket. Like I understand that they have these thresholds, but even if you want to like I don't know, I would expect that. And this is calling back to the stinginess of the Vegas Strip. Like I never understand why my $100 bet can't get me a Miller Lite. right? They can't get me a domestic beer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I think $100 wager.
But I'm with you on, I don't need drink tickets from the sports book to get, like, I'm a gambler, right? The whole casino is available to me. Like, I'll find another way to get my free drink. And a drink that I prefer, actually. You know, since a little more liquor and stuff is open to you. Because drink tickets are often, as I mentioned, limited to, like, simple well drinks and domestic beer. And for people who like maybe something a little bit better, maybe a little bit more wider of an option, you usually can't get that with the drink tickets on the sports book. So anyways, good to know. Good information for anybody going to Harris, Philadelphia. I still need to, I want to see that property now that the sports book's open and stuff like that. I have not, it's Pennsylvania, I believe. I mean, New Mexico notwithstanding, because it's just that one casino there, but I think, not counting that, Pennsylvania, I think, is the only state that has legalized sports betting that I have not made a sports bet in yet.
Hmm.
Yeah. I've done West Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey. Oh, Rhode Island's on the board?
I think already? So, yeah. Yeah, Rhode Island. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, not up there yet. Okay.
See, you're lying already.
Gamblepalooza behind us. There are people have been asking about potential things throughout the year. One, an MGM meetup is likely. I can tell you it's going to be very casual. I can tell you it's most likely going to be a Sunday morning. And that's where we're going to start. So if that idea, Sunday morning MGM, does not appeal to you, that wouldn't be able to work, don't be too frustrated, because that'll be where we start. But there's only one PyGal table open in the first half of the day. And when I went and played VP on Sunday morning, granted, it got later morning by the time I went down and sort of monitored the area, but it was already full. And the three craps tables they had were all full. So a Saturday or Sunday morning is probably going to be best. And by early, I mean, like, I plan on being on the table before 9 o'clock. And we'll see how that works. No certain Sunday yet, but once I have that, I will tweet it out immediately and then talk about it on the following show. But as soon as I have a decision on that, and that's where we'll start. I'd like to make these little casual half day meetups a thing every couple of months to sort of scratch the itch on the social aspect of gambling and this community and stuff. So and at other properties. So that we'll start there. Eric, the summit's coming up in October. I saw a tweet saying that they're doing more planning. I intend on being there from Friday to Friday. So the Friday that it starts, which is what, the 11th? Yep. October 11th is when I plan on getting in, and I plan on being there through, I'll either leave the 17th or the 18th. So it's going to be a full week in Vegas for me, which is going to be, it's a long time in Vegas. I know that. And I'm constantly thinking about that, but I do want to be there for the summit. I do want to be there for G2E, and that's the time period that it takes. So I'm going to be there. I am hoping to be at, I'm planning on being at Ellis Island for the G2E portion of it. So the Monday through Thursday. Eric, I emailed Anna Marie like we talked about last week. I said, hey, I'm going to be in town. Would love to look. I feel like a super awkward, because I don't know what to say, man. Like, I don't work with hosts. So I said I'm headed back to Vegas for the Global Gaming Expo in October, and was thinking of Ellis Island. I wanted to see if you have availability that week and what sort of arrangements we can make. Was that a good start? What I miss? What I leave out that I should have included? Eric's muted. I see that now.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've been talking, and it wasn't until you said Eric's muted that I don't know when I muted that. So what I would have added is what type of action she should expect from you.
Okay. So her response was a rate. So her response was a rate for the night, right? So thanks for reaching out. I look forward to having you back in. I can set your rate for a room. And she sets the price. They are newly remodeled. Would you like me to put you in the system for this now? Should I ask about back end, I'm curious if there, like, what should my response be to this? Like, how direct can you, should I be with this when I don't really have a relationship with her?
You should be completely direct, but in both directions. So she should know what to expect from you, and you should know what you can expect for that action. The first thing I would do is I would look at the rates that she's quoting you relative to what's available on the website.
Okay.
Okay. If this isn't a substantial discount, I don't know that I would have my heart set on Ellis Island as the place to stay.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if you've done that step.
I have not yet, but that's a good
right. So I mean, you know, I don't know what Ellis Island. You know, I mean, it is G2E, but I don't know what Ellis Island is going for. Like, if Ellis Island is going for $129 and she's quoting you $99, like, you know, come on, man. It's Ellis Island, and
I'm definitely not. I'm definitely not forcing it, but I'm, you know, if it works out, that you know, that's where my.
You know, I don't remember what your average was, but the last time we were there, we played there quite a while. And
my average would have been 20 because I was playing two hands at $10 a piece.
Okay. Well, then maybe that's all that you should get.
But here's the thing is maybe you tell me, I emailed her from I didn't email her from the email that would be on my Players Club.
Well, did you give her your player's number to look up your play?
No, I should probably do that, huh?
Oh, Tim. Okay.
I'm new to this, man. Right.
Okay, so here's, okay.
Give me 101 on cold emailing a host.
Okay. All right. So this is the Dear Hebrew Hammers segment. All right. So when you are emailing her, right, you want to start with who you are and what your player's card number is so she can check your play. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, if your rated play does not qualify you for a comp, but that's really what you're looking for, I would tell her in the email what your action is or what you expect your action to be, and ask if that would qualify for a comp. If the answer is no, then you want to know what type of action would she need to pick up the room on the back end. And you're going to specifically ask, what do you need to see either coin in or time and or average bet in order for this to be a compable stay? And most places will tell you what they need. And then you can decide if it's worth your while or not. So if she's telling you, you know, 129, and I'm pulling that number out of the air, but she's telling you 129 a night, and she's following up with, I need $100 average at 4 hours a day. Well, you don't need to give that action for Super 8. If you're going to give that kind of action, you could stay at a nicer place.
Okay. So here's part of my, I have not given Caesars any action really in a while, and if I pulled up unless I win like and had a few days at Horseshoe Baltimore to get some action back into the system, there's nothing worthwhile even that Caesars is offering me in Vegas.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons why I was like, well, let me think about some other properties then. If I can't go with the automatic that Caesars has been the past couple of years with just the comp room, no resort fees, right? Let me see where my options may be.
considering lower end play for what might qualify for a comp room, I would be contacting a host at Treasure Island, at SLS, at the Palms, at, let's see, you know, you're not going to get what you want from Bally's or MGM just talking to a host. You want,
right,
you know, an independent property with somebody that you can talk to. I would think Ellis Island would do it. I'm not shilling for the Plaza, but the Plaza has been very upfront. It's a $25 average for 4 hours a day. That gets you a comp room. I think that's where you fall in. And
so here is, so to continue this, like, why, like, you know, why am I bothering with Ellis Island? When it, right now, if I go into Caesar Rewards, Monday through Thursday, $91 a night at the Link is what my account is pulling up.
And what would, what was the price quoted at Ellis Island?
$55 a night.
So, I mean, I would rather pay $91 at the Link than $55 at Ellis Island, personally.
I don't disagree with you. And when it comes to paying, that will be my alternative. But
right, and you might have a resort fee on top of the 55.
Right. Yes, of course. But if the difference is a certain amount of play can get me comped at Ellis, whereas it only gets me a discount or maybe not even at the Link or Flamingo, you know, I'd consider Ellis Island, right? So
sure. So I think the reply to the host at Ellis Island should be, I'm really looking for a comp stay on the back end. What type of action would you need to see for this to be a compable stay?
Okay. I can dig that.
Right. I mean, really what you're asking for is a, you know, she's already at $55. So you're looking at $55 times, what was it, 4 nights?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking for a comp on a $55 room. What do you need to see to make that work?
Okay.
And my expectation with no experience with anybody at Ellis Island is that it really shouldn't be that much.
Okay. We'll give it a shot.
I would imagine, you know, and you can ask for it in coin in or in, you know, table play. You know, she may just give you a theoretical. She may say, I need to see $100 daily theoretical or $200 daily theoretical to comp the room. And then you have to back into that on your own.
Okay. I can dig that. So I still haven't thought about the weekend yet, but my intent is the Plaza only for the reason that you stated. Very upfront, easy, and from what it sounds like, pretty easy to work with.
Yeah, I mean, again, so understand that, you know, they've renovated their rooms too, or at least a bunch of them are very, very recently renovated. It's still downtown. You know, it's not the lap of luxury. But it is, I think, for what you're looking for, suitable accommodations. And they will keep you longer than the weekend. So, you know, if they're willing to play ball, maybe just extend your stay there.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I didn't think about SLS either. That's not a bad idea either. Contact SLS. So give me, let's round off with this. You gave me a little, like, I've opened an account at SLS. So I have a player's card with SLS, but I, other than that, I'm not really familiar with the property. Treasure Island's even better, better example. Treasure Island. I'm not sure I even have a player's card. Player's card at Treasure Island. I have no experience there. I think I played there one time way back in the day before, like when I was still wet behind the ear gambler. Let's say I was interested in that and I wanted to see if I wanted to acquire a comped room through this process. What's the process I'm going through? I think this is something that a lot of gamblers who don't deal with this stuff struggle with, and or I don't know, maybe I'm You're muted again, by the way. I don't know what you're doing over there, but you're there.
I have no idea how that happened. I'm literally not doing.
Anyways, Treasure Island's a really great example because I have no experience with them or even a card with them and no action that they can track, whatever. What's the cold contact I'm doing? How am I doing that? Should I find should I find someone first that maybe has a contact there? Do I just call it? Like, what's the process that I should be going through here?
I always prefer a referral. So if you know somebody who has a host there and they like the host there, that's usually a better intro than just calling for the host on duty. And that'll generally get you farther if you are referred by somebody, and you know, you want to be referred by somebody who actually has play there.
What do I ask? So, like, let's say you know a guy. Am I asking? Right. Am I telling you, hey, connect me with your guy? Like, so he gets a hold of me. You're giving me his information, so I get a hold of him. Like, what's the preferred process there?
So I'm generally looking for a host that does email correspondence. Most do. And then, so let's assume, all right, so it's me and you, right? You would say to me, hey, Eric, you have a host at TI? I would say, yeah, I've got a good guy. I like him. Can you introduce me? Now I'm going to send an email to the host copying you on it. Let's call the host Joe. Hey, Joe, my buddy Tim wants to come into town. I know that he's a player. I'll vouch for him. He's a good guy. Please see what you can do for him. Tim, this is Joe. Joe is my host. He's always taking good care of me. You know, I'm going to drop off here. If either of you need me, feel free to contact me. And then, you know, just list everybody's contact information on there. And then I'm out. Your response to Joe at that point should be just what I mentioned earlier. Hi, Joe. This is Tim. I want to come check out your property. I don't have any rated play. I don't expect you to comp me on the front end because I haven't shown you anything yet, but I would like to know what type of action you would need to see in order for you to comp and give them the dates that you want, because obviously a peak Saturday is going to require more play than, you know, Tuesday through Thursday, whenever. So they should be able to tell you the information that you're looking for. And if you came in vouched for, they're usually willing to spend the time to develop the relationship. And if you say to him, you know, I'm typically a craps player averaging $100 a hand, you know, you're giving them specifics. They know what type of player you are.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're going to come in and you're going to say, I play blackjack, $5 a hand, and I'll probably play for 45 minutes, they'll tell you up front, I'm probably not going to be able to comp your room. Maybe I can give you a casino rate and take it from there.
$5 flat bet for 45 minutes, Eric. It's better part of an hour, mind you. You're saying that's probably not getting me a room?
I mean, you'll get a room. You'll just get a price associated with a room.
Right. Yeah. They'll still give you a room. They'll even tidy it up each morning.
Maybe.
Depends. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. That may not be the case. Okay. Well, very good. That gives me some things to think about then. I do appreciate your insight there. It's a part of, I'm trying to develop that part of, my gambling experience. And that's part of, I know when I brought up Ellis Island originally, you were like, huh, really Ellis Island? I think what it is I have the contact for a host. Right. So when I thought like, oh, where can I get her business card was sitting right here. Right. So, I don't know if do you have someone at Treasure Island you can introduce me to?
I believe I do. I don't have a strong relationship there, but when we had Zorkfest there, I think I do have somebody for you. Here's another thing, or maybe
the Plaza. Maybe the Plaza is a good spot to do the whole week at.
The Plaza, I could definitely connect you with the right people. Okay. Another thing that you might want to do, if this is something that's going to be, you know, you're going to continue to travel, you want to have rated play with a host that can vouch for you. So
okay.
I can tell him that you are a solid citizen and you're going to come play and you're not going to stiff him. But once you have the relationship with a host, when you're now contacting another property, you can then give them the contact information for your host, who can then say, yeah, he's a rated player over here. He's been a $50 a hand average, $100, whatever the number is. And, you know, when the host says that he's a solid citizen and he shares the theoretical, it goes a lot farther. So you always want to have a relationship with at least one host that can vouch for you and can kind of cite your numbers to give the other host an idea of what they should expect.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. That's
yep.
Good insight. I appreciate that. I am working with my designer again, finally. I know people have been patiently waiting for a Pi Gal shirt, and so I'm going to send him over the stuff for that. We'll finally start getting that going. You can check out the shirts that we have, thebetterlife.us/merch. Use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. And that does it for today. I hope I'm glad everybody tuned in. Thank you for joining us for sort of a mix and match sort of grab bag episode as we catch up on some things, talk about some things that had sort of been in my notes but never really got around to, and of course covering the Derby, catching up on the Summit, stuff like that. So very well. Well, I'm Timothy Lawson on behalf of Eric Rosenthal. Good night, good luck.